Welcome to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Today I'm going to sit down with Chance Musterman. For more than 20 years, Chance has been writing and playing original music, as well as entertaining people from all over the state of Texas. With an eclectic blend of acoustic rock that spans genres from classic to alternative rock sounds. He's from El Paso, but he moved to North Texas about, 20, 25 years ago, and I met him shortly after he moved here. So I hope y'all enjoy this session I had with Chance Musterman.
So, man, what's been going on? I feel like the last time I saw you was, physically saw you, I think it was about maybe 4 years ago. I think you came out and see me play at a local bar up in Keller.
Yeah, I saw you and your band playing at that time. It was called the Bronx and Rock.
That's
now
right.
Now it's called the Poor Sack.
Right.
So
that's
they
right.
Still did live music, of course. I don't know how much they're doing right now with everything going on, right? But just happened to stumble on you, and I told the old lady, I said, hey, let's run down there and see Chance play. And we were just sitting there. You got off the stage, kind of walked by, and I hollered at you, and you were surprised because up before then, man, I don't know how long it's been since I had seen you. So we had a good little, catching up. And then once again, text message here and there and
yeah.
Facebook, hello here and there. But that's about it. So, man, it's good to kind of virtually be face to face with you because it's been a while.
It has, and I was thinking about this, and I have a few friends that I've known since I've been here. So I moved here in 1995, and I came here to finish school, actually. And I started in 1996, I started DJing and hosting a karaoke show. And I did that at a place back in the day called Papa G's, and it was over across from the Tarrant County Junior College. It used to be TCJC, now it's just TCC. Over off 26. I can't remember if that's where I met you, but I know I've known you at least since 96, 97, somewhere around there. So we've been friends a long time.
Oh yeah, it does go way back there. It was me and my good old buddy, Kevin Mills. We'd come in and do the karaoke thing with you. And you always had to wait until like the end of that first round because Kevin always liked to pick songs that weren't exactly appropriate for the, people finishing up dinner. And, just having that last drink before they headed out. Plus, it was probably best to have some people with a little bit more booze in them before Kevin got up there and started screaming. But, I was just as bad as well. I mean, I remember some of the songs that I picked out there doing karaoke, looking back on it. I don't think I'd want my kids sitting out in the audience while I was singing them. But man, we had a good time with the karaoke looking back on that. I haven't done it in years, but one of my favorite ones to do was because you would sing the backup was the If I Had $1 Million by the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yes.
And I always let you do the funny parts. So I don't know why I didn't do the funny parts, but I could tell you always liked doing that one because you got to be the funny guy during that. So, but always loved doing that song.
First of all, Bare Naked Ladies is still a great band, and I just love that song, and it was quirky, and when it came out, I was like, this is like the coolest thing ever, and I had he's still a good friend of mine, affectionately known as Evil Dave Hamilton, and if he's out there watching, hey, what's going on, Evil Dave? But, he's the one that turned me on to that, and I started thinking about some of the concerts that I've been to over the years since I've lived here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I don't know if you know about this or not, but there's a really cool app. It's not even an app. It's a website. It's called setlist.fm. And you can go in and you can type in any place you've ever seen a concert and it will list the set list and you can log in.
Oh, wow.
And it will show if I get my stub, I'll be like, all right. And I usually do it now. If I go to a concert, I immediately put it in, but I went back recently and just typed in everything I could remember. I went and found all my concert stubs every time I ever remembered seeing a show. And the amazing thing is that it categorizes it. It puts everything together and says, okay, you've seen this band this many times. You've heard them play this song this many times. And
wow.
it's pretty cool. You kind of take a walk down memory lane. But one of the first concerts I ever saw was with Dave Hamilton. And he took me to see Bare Naked Ladies. And we saw him at the Bronco Bowl.
I remember the Bronco Bowl.
Yes.
the only concert venue that had a bowling alley attached to it. But
right?
Still a cool place, though. I saw several shows at the Bronco Bowl, and it had a good live venue. And what was the place right next to the Bronco Bowl? It was all within the same deal that was like a smaller music venue.
The Galaxy Club. Not the Galaxy Club. That's in Deep Ellum. It was called the...
Yeah.
Oh, man. I know what you're talking about. But, you know, they did smaller shows there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing some shows there as well. So some kind of lesser known bands, but still had a touring and a following and everything. And it was a cool little place to go as well.
Yeah.
So missed that place.
I can't remember what it was called, but yeah, I remember that too. Yeah. And the first time that I went there, they didn't tell me that it was a bowling alley. I thought Bronco Bowl literally meant it was a bowl shaped venue. And then I walk in, I'm like, there's a freaking bowling alley in here. What kind of crazy crap is this?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I came from, I was raised in El Paso, Texas. I mean, there's like the nothing of nothing there. I mean, there's a lot more to do there now. It's been 25 years. Sure. When I was going to high school there, man, you didn't do anything in El Paso. You either went across the border to drink or you built bonfires and raced motorcycles and dune buggies out in the desert. That's it.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
I got here and there's, you know, football and Stars and Mavericks and baseball and Bronco Bowl. I'm like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I can imagine coming from somewhere like El Paso to the Metroplex. And even when you're talking about back in the mid 90s, I mean, you look at what Deep Ellum was like back in the mid 90s, then all those clubs that were up and down Deep Ellum, and there was never a night you couldn't go down there and find a good show. And that was when, like, you had the Toadies that were coming out and the Edgewater, bands like that from around the Metroplex that got their start. And a lot of times you'd have the Toadies just show up and they'd play a little acoustic set somewhere. It was a real exciting time for music in the Metroplex and going down to Deep Ellum and getting to see all that. And now it's basically a bunch of fancy restaurants. You got Three Links left, and I did see a show at Three Links not that long ago. So they're still trying to hold on to a little bit of that musicness about Deep Ellum, but they cleaned it up quite a bit back, you know, when you and I were stomping around down there the younger days, listening to some alternative rock.
You remember when they slid Rockfest through here and it had 500,000 people up at the Texas Motor Speedway?
So believe it or not, I am probably the only person in the Metroplex that did not go to Rockfest. I was out of town. I was halfway around the world in Australia and Papua New Guinea whenever that concert came through town. I had a ticket. I think everybody had at least two tickets to that thing, but I went out of town and I didn't get to go, but pretty much every single person that I knew back then was at that show.
Well, I didn't go to that show because
it was me and you.
Yeah,
so me and you were the only people that didn't go.
Yeah. But coming full circle here, the reason why I brought it up was because I ended up going that night. I know I can tell you why I wasn't there. I was actually had class that night. I believe it was 97. I was finishing my master's degree in business and I had night classes and it was one night that I didn't actually have to work. And I remember everyone like, oh man, Rockfest, this and that and whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that would have been great to go to, but you know, I had school, you know? And, but I went out afterwards with some friends and we went to Deep Ellum and I went, you remember the Blind Lemon and the Art Bar, the four way, right? I walk into the Art Bar and kid you not, walked in, grab a drink and sitting in the corner. Well, first off I'm completely spacing here. First off, I went to the bar and the guy that was standing next to me was Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains.
So oh, wow.
That was crazy. And I was like, wow, that's really nuts. And then and then I walk around to kind of the corner and I'm looking and I was like, is that Billy Corgan? And Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins was just hanging out, just being Billy Corgan. And it was like, to me, it was also another surreal moment because, you know, El Paso is a beautiful city and it's huge. Actually, even back in the 90s, it was still a million strong, but that was, you know, El Paso side and the Juarez side, being that it was combined two cities. I never saw anything right. like that. And I was like, I was kind of starstruck too, because I at the time I really loved Smashing Pumpkins, and I still do to a certain extent. They just haven't done a whole lot recently. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do? I kind of did that moment where you don't know what to do, and you're like, do you do it? Do you go say something?
Right. Or
you're gonna be that guy? And I was like, I'm gonna be that guy. So I was like,
Look, you've got to be that guy. The people that are entertainers now, if they don't like people coming up to them and wanting to talk to them and say how much they mean to them, you know, ask about music, say, you know, how much they're a fan, then there's something wrong with that entertainer that doesn't want to interact with their fans. Because if it wasn't for the fans, and I don't care if it's movies or music or whatever it is, if you denigrate your fans and you try to be a pompous person about it, eventually that word gets around. Look what has happened to Ellen DeGeneres right now, and all the backpedaling that she's had to do because of the supposed toxic work environment that she has. And if you would have looked at her show, she's supposed to be this, you know, super nice person, and not, you know, I would never would have pictured it, not in a million years.
Yeah.
But you kind of never know. And sometimes it comes back to bite them. So.
It does. And he was actually really receptive about it, because I didn't pull the 13-year-old girl act and was like, oh my God,
right.
That's Billy Corgan. I walked up and I was like, I kind of gave him the nod, and I was like, hey man, I love your stuff. Thank you for what you do. And he was just like, thanks man. And that's it. It was that, but that's all I needed. I was like, and I remember I was with some friends, and of all people that we saw, I don't even know why. I mean, I wasn't into the band. They said they were playing, and they're like, we need to go check them out. The Polyphonic Spree was playing in the other corner. And I'm trying to think of what that club, the Curtain Club was across. I'm trying to think what was in that four-way complex, but whatever that bar was where the concert venue was, the Polyphonic Spree was playing. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't even know who they were. I know now, because I remember being there and having the ticket that they gave me, even though I didn't pay for it. I just walked in and they're like, oh, you're here for the concert. I'm like, okay. And they gave me a thing and a wristband and I walked in.
Right.
But I remember just how cool that was. And I went up to my buddy. I'm like, hey man, I just got a beer over there with Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains. And he just looked at me, laughed. He's like, get full of it. I'm like,
right.
You can go over there if you want. I mean, he's probably still sitting there drinking his beer. So whatever.
He most likely was, you know, maybe trying to hide a little bit, maybe hoping nobody would recognize him. But yeah, you're not going to go into a music club back in those days in Dallas and, you know, see some kind of a guy like a Jerry Cantrell or a Billy Corgan and them not get recognized. I mean, they kind of knew going in, but you know what? They're regular people just like me and you. They like to go to places. They, you know, want to belly up to the bar and have a beer and, you know, talk to the person next to them and ask what, you know, they're up to and what they're thinking, all that good stuff. So yeah, once you get past that part about the whole celebrity thing, and look, they're people, you know, they're just regular people. And a lot of times, like you said, you know, you didn't want to walk up and do the 13-year-old girl thing and giggle and freak out and all that. The crazy part about that now with, and of course you're talking about back in the day where you didn't have a smartphone in your pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no way for you to take a selfie with him and then post it to Facebook and say, hey, look, I'm with Billy Corgan right now at Deep Ellum, and everybody, you know, saw it and they all rushed down there to do it.
Right.
Nowadays, I can see where some of the celebrities get a little nervous with the selfie stuff and all that, because maybe they are just like Jerry Cantrell, who was wanting to sit there and have a peaceful beer. And next thing you know, every Alice in Chains fan within 25 miles is flooding into that bar, and he can't sit there and enjoy himself. And, you know, sure, after about the, you know, 95th person coming up to him asking him for an autograph, and his beer's now warm because it sat there so long and he couldn't drink it, you know, you kind of understand that. I was on an airplane, oh gosh, this was about a year and a half ago or so, coming back from Atlanta. I was out of town in Atlanta, and I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting in the window seat, and there's a woman sitting next to me, and she's got her cell phone up, and she's trying to take this secretive picture of a guy that's sitting in the row across from us. And so I'm sitting there and I'm watching her, and I said, "Ma'am, what are you doing?" She's like, "Well, don't you know who that guy is?" And I said, "What guy?" And she's like, "The guy sitting over there in the window seat." I said, "No." She's like, "That's T.I. And I said, okay. I have no idea who that is. So we're sitting there, you know, the plane's boarding. I text the wife. I'm like, "You ever heard of somebody named T.I.? And I shoot this picture to her, and she's, you know, doing the, "OMG, is he really on your plane or whatever?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't have a clue who this guy is." And so I get this like mini diatribe, you know, "You just watched this movie and he was in this and he writes this song and he's doing all this." And I'm like, "Okay, great. You know, I just thought he was just some normal dude, other than the fact he had two cell phones and he was talking on one and he'd say, 'Hang on,' and he'd pick up the other one." So beautiful part about this, right? Plane takes off and I figure he's going to pull to put my headphones on and lean over against the wall and go to sleep. No, turns out he decides to talk to me and the guy he was sitting next to. And all we did for that about hour and 45 minute flight was talk about classic cars.
That's awesome.
Not one thing about movies, not one thing about music, but just talked about classic cars. And super down to earth guy. But I'm sure he probably appreciated the fact, because I did tell him as we were getting off the plane, I walked down the little ramp with him. I said, "By the way, I know you're a celebrity and everything, but I didn't have a clue who you were. My wife had to tell me who you were." And he thought that was funny. He's like, "Well, you know, that's cool. I appreciate it." And then off he went to catch his connecting flight. So
right.
Nice guy though.
That's pretty cool. I had, going on the theme of there's people that are famous for whatever thing that it is they do, whether they're an actor or an athlete or whatever. And I had a very similar experience. Back in like 99, right around 2000, I think it was 99. You remember Zach Thomas? He was a linebacker for the Miami Dolphins, but then he went to the Cowboys eventually. He played his last couple years there.
Yeah, that name really rings a bell. Yeah.
Well, he played for Tech. That's kind of where he got started and everyone knew it. And then he got drafted and played a majority of his career for the Miami Dolphins. And I'm a Dolphins fan. And then he ended up his last couple of seasons, in Dallas. Well, anyway, I call him my godfather. He's closest thing I probably have to one. My dad's best friend and business partner at the time, his cousin, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Anyway, guy he knew was married and his cousin was Zach Thomas. And so we went to go see a Miami Dolphins game, which was, to me, was cool. I was just going to go see a game in Florida. I had never gone to I had only been to one other professional football game before, and it was to a Cowboys game. I went to a friend, and he's like, "Hey, we're going to go down to Florida, and we're going to go see the game, and probably, you know, after the game, you know, meet in the players' parking lot, and we can, you know, meet Zach Thomas." And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's so cool!" I was just excited about that. So, the game, first of all, they lost, which was sucked, and it was a close one. And if I remember correctly, and I'd have to go back to look at the exact date, I think it was Dan Marino's last home game. So that was the other reason why I was excited to see it, because I got to see Dan Marino play live one time at least. And anyway, so we go out to the players' parking lot. We're just kind of standing around waiting for the players to come out. And I thought it was just going to be a quick meet and greet, and then we were going to bail. So I get my picture with him, and then he's doing a couple other pictures. And this one guy, he's kind of crazy, even though he's the cousin. I guess he kind of knew up front, and he had all of his stuff. And he was like, "Hey, sign this. Hey, sign this." And he's like, you know, 15 things, like balls and T-shirts and jerseys. And hey, I got this, you know, football card. Coaster. And you just sign a coaster, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of crazy. Anyway, I was just hanging out because I just thought it was cool that I got my picture with Zach Thomas. Anyway, so – whether it was a kismet, whether it was he just saw me hanging out and thought whatever, he kind of came up to me and he's like, "Dude, we need to get out of here." And I was like, "Yeah, that's cool. I mean, we were here for the game and we're going to stay one more day and then we're taking off." He's like, "Oh yeah, well, when are you leaving?" I'm like, "We're not leaving until, you know, Tuesday or whatever it was, because the game was on Sunday." And he's like, "Well, I think that, I think he wanted to go, you know, get dinner. Man, we just took a loss. I'm not really into this. I don't feel like getting out anywhere. Hey, you want to come over to the house and we eat pizza and shoot pool? And I'm like, yes. Yeah, yes. Yes, I would like that very much.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, did I say yes? Did you hear me say yes?
I was like, yeah.
In case I just bit my tongue off because I stepped on my own foot, I just want to make sure I said yes.
It was the coolest thing ever. And so we get there, and he's got this house. And it typical, think of Miami Vice, Miami-Dade County house. White, big, you know.
The huge windows.
Huge windows. The white banister poles across the front patios. I mean, just whatever you can imagine Miami house would look like. It looked like this, but it was huge. And we roll up and we kind of pull in this corner thing and go into the house. And, dude, this place is crazy. Like, you walk in and there's a white grand baby grand piano with, like, fake fur things and art deco, and it's like this whole thing, and I'm just kind of looking, I'm like, holy crap. And he looks at me, he's like, oh, don't worry about that, my sister decorated the house for a photo shoot. And I was like, okay.
And, right.
So we're kind of chilling out, and we get pizza ordered, and the rest of the entourage, of course, I'm with my godfather, his two sons, the cousin, everyone, they're playing pool. And again, I guess there was that kismet or chemistry, whatever. He's like, hey, man, you want to check something out real quick? I want to show you something. I'm like, sure. So we go upstairs to his bedroom, and he's got one of those. The master bedroom was like a house in itself, okay? Had this huge bed, whatever, and he's like, this is the coolest thing ever. I haven't been able to show anyone this. And he flips a switch, and it's one of the first ones where the TV popped up at the end of the bed and went,
oh. Right.
This is like 99, so there wasn't really flat screen TVs then. I think it was well, actually there was. I mean, there was, you know, they had plasmas at the
time.
Yeah,
but they were like $5,000 or $6,000 at the time.
Right.
It wasn't like going down to Walmart and getting one for $200.
No. And this thing was all popped up and whatever. And then the strangest thing I can tell you, that not only just a celebrity, but anyone has ever asked me in my life, and I will never forget this story. He's like, hey, man, what size shoe you wear? I was like, what? 11 and a half, 12? You know, why? What's up? He's like, man, come here. And he opens up his closet, and he has an entire closet. I can't make this up. I swear to God. An entire closet full of Nike shoes. He's like, hey, pick some shoes if you want. I can't wear all these. He's like, I'm a 12. If you can fit one, get a pair of shoes. And I'm like, just like my jaw is dropped. I'm like, yeah, man, I tell you what, I really appreciate that. But, you know, I think I'm good. You know, I'm just kind of excited about the fact that I'm in Zach Thomas's bedroom.
Yeah.
He showed me this kick-ass TV, and he's got a room full of Nike shoes. My friends are not going to believe this.
Exactly.
There's way.
You're probably like, hey, can we do the TV trick again? I don't care about a pair of shoes. I want to watch the TV trick again.
Yeah. You want a spoon? I mean, let's just watch HBO.
I think there's a new episode. At that time, it's probably Sex in the City was still on. You know, you could sit there and watch Sex in the City with it, something like that.
Hey, man, let's just grab a pizza. Screw these guys. They're playing pool. I don't need any of this.
No. Dude, that's beautiful.
But it, you know, it just kind of goes back to, like you said, you know, everyone's just, we're just the human beings on this planet trying to get along. And, you know, it's pretty fascinating what's happening.
Yeah. So, you know, some people are better at it than others. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. So you don't have to be a celebrity to be mean to somebody or treat them the wrong way or say the wrong thing. I mean, I know over time I've probably said some mean things to people. You probably said some mean things to people. You look back and you say, yeah, why'd I say that? Why'd I do that? But we all make mistakes. But in general, you know, I think most people are well-natured. They want to get along. They want to be nice. And they don't want to be pushed, obviously. Some people get pushed a little more than others do. But, you know, not to do the whole, you know, can't we all just get along speech. I think for the most part, most people just want to have some down-to-earth conversations with people. I think, to be quite honest with you, that is why podcasting is becoming so popular. Regular people can use the internet. They can have conversations. They can talk to different people from different walks of life, the same walks of life, same interests, different interests, learn about stuff. And you don't have to have this ginormous production behind you to make you a talking head anymore. You know, it gone are the days of the three news channels. Now you've got a bajillion news channels. You've got independent news channels now. And you've got shows like this that, you know, you and I, even though we've known each other forever, and now that you kind of took that trip down memory lane with me, I didn't even realize it'd been that long, to be quite honest with you. But
yeah.
Wow, yeah, it's 20 plus years. Now people can get that voice heard. Maybe something you say, maybe something I say, or that we collaborate on, spark somebody's interest, and they say, hey, you know, I never thought of that, or hey, that Zach Thomas story, man, that's a great story. You know, be careful, Zach Thomas might be calling you in like 2 days saying, hey man, I remember you, and you didn't take those shoes. What's your address? I'm gonna mail you some shoes. You never know. I think it's great. I think it's cool that we have this ability now to where we can put the voice out there, and whoever wants to hear it will hear it. If you don't want to hear it, you don't have to hear it. Kind of like I said, you know, the three news channels. I mean, you and I grew up where there wasn't that much on TV, and then maybe your parents went out and sprung for cable, and next thing you know, now you have maybe 10 or 15 channels worth watching, because back in the early days of cable, there were just horrible channels all over it and nothing to watch. Now, just before you and I hooked up here tonight for this, boy's sitting there on his Nintendo Switch watching YouTube videos. And I don't think that kid has honestly sat down and watched a real television show.
Right.
I mean, it's YouTube shows, it's Twitch streams, it's podcasts, it's things like that. It's creative content. There's so many people out there that can create now, and with the avenues of the internet and things like podcasting and everything, there's so much creativity out there that we're actually getting to see so much different. While at the same time, ironically, Hollywood is remaking everything. Like the guys that we paid all this money to go see the movies and pay for the CDs and do all that stuff, right? They just keep churning out the same stuff. And then they scratch their head saying, well, why are these movies not doing as well?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you keep making the same movie. There's only so many versions of comic books that I can watch, and it's all the same comic book movie. Granted, they're good movies. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're good movies, but yeah, I'm sure you remember. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and when the new Star Wars movies came out, other than Rogue One, I was disappointed. And I remember when I saw Episode 8 in the movie theater. It, you know, Episode 7 came out and everybody knew it was going to be fan service. It had been too long. You knew Harrison Ford was going to be in it. You knew Mark Hamill was going to be in it. You knew Carrie Fisher was going to be in it. It's like, okay, there's going to be fan service in this. So I always gave Episode 7 a pass. Then Rogue One came out and I thought, man, that was a great movie. And Rogue One was a great movie.
It was.
I remember sitting next to my wife when Episode 8, we went and we watched that in the movie theater opening weekend. And when it ended, she looked at me and she said, what's the matter? And I looked at her and I honestly, Chance, I might have cried. I think I turned and looked at her with a tear in my eye and said, that sucked. Like that movie sucked. And I took like personal offense to the fact that movie sucked. So I called some buddies of mine, and our little deal we always did, I'd always go see the Star Wars movies with my family. And then the next night I'd go out with two buddies of mine that are huge Star Wars fans too.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, and they always knew I'd already seen the movie, but I wouldn't say anything. Of course, you know, no spoilers, all that good stuff. And I told them, we go in the movie and they can tell, like, I don't even want to be there. And they said, Max, this movie sucks, doesn't it? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to say anything. And they're like, no, we can tell just by looking at you. And I remember getting up to go to the bathroom, and they've never seen me do that in a Star Wars movie. And they're like, oh man, this movie does suck. Max was getting up to go to the bathroom. So, nine's a different story, but yeah, this whole podcasting thing and music too. I mean, you know, you had to have a label, you had to have all of this stuff just to make it in the music business. You had to do touring and you had to do all this. And now with things like Spotify and Apple and all the other stuff that you can put music out on now. You don't need that backing. And sure, record companies still scoop up the people that they think they can market in certain ways. And you're the music guy, not me, but I almost look at it as they don't really need too much on the talent side. It's more of a look side, because they can make them sound good with all the fancy stuff that they've got in the studios now. And they'll go hire session musicians to actually record the music and auto-tune their voice. And, you know, as long as you can dance and, you know, you look halfway decent, they make you a marketable person. So kind of a little segue into what's been going on in your music world. You know, you've been plugging along for a long time, putting out some good music. And I know that you just had a new release that I know I want to talk to you a little bit about. But in this era now, in the streaming versus selling physical copies era, mm-hmm. how is that now for the artist, for the singer-songwriter? What have you seen over those years that's been such a change? And tell me about that.
So here's where it started for me, because when I first started writing, obviously I was a lot younger and just kind of learning my craft. And at the time I didn't even know it was a craft. It was just something I wanted to do. When I first learned how to play guitar, I wanted to meet chicks. That's what it was. Right. And, yep. But then I just loved what I did. And then I had ideas and I was writing songs, and a lot of them, I've told this story before, is that I wrote 100 songs and 96 of them were horrible, you know? And so around 1998, 1999, I recorded some of those songs and I put them out. Well, back, this was like, I mean, even the internet was still new. I mean, it wasn't even
right.
Fully formed. I mean, everyone still had an AOL account and they were thinking that, oh, I'm in a chat room and this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Well, the first iteration of music of any kind that was online was literally a place called mp3.com. And it was purchased by Broadcast Music, which ended up being swept up by Mark Cuban's company, but then ended up getting shut down for a little company called Napster. And mp3.com was the first fully non-commercial, non-label website where anyone who could create music could put it on. They had charts and you could sell your music. And the first taste of anything I ever got was I put a song on there, and it was one I thought was pretty good. And I don't know, in like a couple of days, I got an email or something and said, you might want to go check out the charts. You're number 6. And I'm like, well, nah, whatever. That doesn't mean anything. Well, it does when there's 200,000 people a day going to the website. And yeah. It was the first time I'd ever done anything. And I actually sold quite a few singles. I didn't sell the album. I sold quite a few singles, and it was a lot. I mean, it was all monetized. Like there was no, they hadn't figured out yet that, oh, well, we're going to keep 2% for ourselves while we're doing this. It was, no one had any clue what the internet was going to be. And so they realized quickly that it was a money-making operation. And that's when the smart people came in and said, well, we got to shut this down and figure right. out how we're going to, we can't have this. The artist can't get all the money. So, right. Yeah. So fast forward to, you know, let's say 2011. 2011 comes around and I take a couple of those songs and I re-record them. And then I wrote some new songs and I recorded those. And at that time, all that was available, Spotify wasn't around yet. All that was available was Apple Music. And it was big because, you know, even 9 years ago, I mean, the iPhone was just coming out. I think by that time it was in, you know, maybe the 3GS or whatever it was. And, but I was able to, you know, jump on board pretty quickly with a newer technology that no one knew about. So in 2011, I was able to go, hey, I got a song on iTunes. And everyone's like, what? How did you do that? And so that did a little something. Okay. But even then it was, all right, if you sell your song for 99 cents, you're going to get 79 cents. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty good deal. I can put my stuff on Apple Music and they're only going to take 20%. was like, yeah, I'm totally down with that. I'm okay. And so I sold a few records that way. And so then I kind of went through a lull. You know, I played in a band called Bad Karma. And I did that for about 15 years off and on. But for the last 10 years since I put that record out, I was concentrating on playing gigs and doing cover music and doing all this stuff. And I kind of put down the songwriting thing, even though I always liked doing it. But I just never quite had that connection with someone to go do something. And so a couple of years ago, I guess it's been almost three now, 2017, Bad Karma played sort of their final show. We did a big blowout. I got to play for Stan Lee of Marvel comic fame. Yes. And I played at his private event for a Comic-Con on New Year's Eve for 2017 going into 2018. I got Stan Lee signing, you know, the drum head of our drummer's stuff. I mean, he came up I'm on stage while we're doing the countdown. It was like, if you want to talk about a bang, big bang going out for the band that I had been in for 15 years, we had just done it. I was like, you know what? I'm good now, right?
Hey, that right there is tough to top. Yeah. So yeah. How are you going to top that show?
Right. So we kind of left when we thought, well, we'll still get together now and again, but everyone at this point had side projects except me, and I wasn't doing anything. So the guitarist and I decided that we were going to kind of keep going, but we were going to do acoustic things. So we turned it from Bad Karma into Acoustic Karma. And it was like, all right, we're still going to play and just get out, because I still like doing that. But I started writing some songs, and I started just thinking about what I wanted to do. And I wrote a song in 2018 that I actually sat on. I sat on it for a reason, and I don't tell anyone about it. It's one of those things. I keep that to me. But I sat on it because I didn't think I wanted to release it. And I sat on it for almost a year. And I put it out at the beginning of this year, and the song's called Every Step. And it is, it was cathartic for me. It's a hopeful song, and I just wanted to put it out. I could care less whether it had done anything or made any money. It wasn't about that. It was about just getting out the song and seeing if I could touch someone else's life like it made me feel. And it's since now gone on and done pretty well. It's done pretty successfully. I have a little over 180,000 streams of that song on Spotify. And
that's great.
Yeah, it is. But let's take the timeline now. MP3.com in 99. Everything I owned, everything I did, I probably only sold, I don't know, I might have sold 8,000 copies of that single, but multiply that times a dollar, you know? So
yeah,
not bad, right? And then
yeah. Hey, that pays for some guitar strings and, you know, a new guitar and a few other things.
Right. So
nothing wrong with that.
Let's, you know, realistically, I don't really care. I tell people I made, I haven't made any money in music. It's not about that for me, but let's say I made $8,000 to $10,000 in 1999. In 2011, I put out some records on this new thing called iTunes that everyone's freaking out about. And I don't know, I sold 1,000 singles at 79 cents, so I made like $800.
$800. Yeah.
And then I got 180,000 listens from a single on Spotify, and I just got a royalty check from Spotify. I could even screenshot it to you right now. It literally came in yesterday. I'm getting a check for $87.
I've heard those stories about, you know, the streams and whatever it is, like 0.006 or whatever
three.
For a stream or 0.003. Yeah, I yes. knew it was some minuscule amount, right? But I think you hit the nail on the head. And you and I, but when we talked earlier, we kind of talked about this, in getting in with the podcasting thing, my co-host and I, you know, we weren't running out there and trying to see if we could throw ads in it and mm-hmm. put ads all over the place and think, oh, you know, somebody needs to be paying us for this time. Look, like music to us, the podcast thing, it's something that's enjoyable. It's relaxing. And we both made an agreement whenever this became not fun, when we dreaded the fact that, hey, you know, we're going to meet once a week and we're going to have what we call our production meeting, which is basically us could just, you know, sitting back and forth saying, hey, what do we want to talk about? And then we record some podcasts the day that we say, man, you know what? I'm not feeling it. we just hang it all up and we walk away. Cause you, it's gotta be fun. Like you said, you go out and you want to play the acoustic shows cause you like getting up in front of a crowd. You like playing the guitar. You like singing, you know, it, you, you like that part. You're not sitting in the background going like this, trying to figure out how am I going to control the world and get all the money in the world for doing it. So as long as you keep up with that, as long as you say, I want to put that stuff out that I enjoy, somebody out there is going to have that same taste. You know, somebody out there is going to have that same sense of humor, that same taste in music, that, that same kid, you know, like my boy who's 13 years old might see you play the guitar, or even, you know, when I pick up the guitar at home and play, that's why he's playing the guitar now. He's not thinking he's going to be some big, rich rock star. He enjoys playing the guitar. And once you take the enjoyment out of stuff and you make it a job, then it's just another job. So why would you wouldn't do your regular job and not get paid for it, right? So if you turn it into a job, then it just takes all that out. So when you brought out this new song, and one of the things I wanted to talk to you about with that, especially with the kind of the Spotify deal and everything, are albums just kind of going away now? I mean, there's really no reason for a band or whatever to sit down and put 10, 12 songs together because nobody goes to Walmart or Target or that, you know, there's no CD stores. There's no Blockbuster Music anymore where you go and you flip through CDs. Is the album dead? Is it going to be just slow releases of singles? And maybe if you're some huge band and you've been a band for 30 years, like, and since we brought them up, the Smashing Pumpkins. And in fact, I think I'm not 100% on this, but I think even the Smashing Pumpkins did some like just single drop releases here and there. Yeah. Are albums dead? Are we not going to get that anymore? Is it going to be singles?
I think that we're going through a reversal a little bit. We're kind of coming back through this like cyclical era of music. But think about this. In the 50s, nobody bought albums. Everybody bought singles. They were called 45s. And they 40, were hot.
45. And they had the big hole in the middle. Yeah.
They did. They bought 45s. As a matter of fact, and I know I'm a little bit older than you. I may even be a lot older than you, but you know, that's what I bought. I mean, I had, you know, everyone still had 45s. I went to the music store as a kid and I still have them. I mean, I've got probably a stack of like 50 45s, everything from Prince to Van Halen to whatever was popular in 1982, 1983, they were still putting out 45s. People were buying singles. They weren't, you know, but albums were still really big. Albums got huge right at the end of the 60s. You talk about the Beatles started doing everything with their singles, but then, man, Meet the Beatles comes out. Then you get all the great stuff that they got going. Then everyone's like, oh my God, I've heard, you know, Help, and I've heard, you know, I Saw Her Standing There, and now I want to get all of them on one record so I don't have to keep flipping these things around. And then early 70s comes on and you start getting some really big bands. You're getting Pink Floyd, you're getting Led Zeppelin, you're getting Aerosmith, you're getting all of these, like what you call now classic rock arena type multi, you know, faceted instrumentalist bands. And they want you to buy their album because a Pink Floyd record like Dark Side of the Moon, you know, yeah, money might be a single, but it doesn't make any sense unless you hear it with everything else. And so, yes, I think right now it's singles. And I think the reason why, though, isn't because people enjoy buying singles. I think it's because our target audience at this point now is I think the attention span is so bad that if you don't put out something hot, new, and fresh every – it feels like almost a couple of weeks you're not doing it right. I can't do that. I mean, I've got this one I just released. I'm going to have another one next month that I did a collaboration with someone. And I think I've got one more for me. So I'm going to do like four a year and I think I'm good. One a quarter and I'm pretty good because, you know, whatever. But yeah, I'll at the end of this year, I've got enough songs that I could put an album together and I may call it an EP. I might call it an album, but I mean, I made 50 copies of actual CDs that I thought, hey, this would be cool. You know, people might want this and whatever. And I've given more away than I've sold, and obviously.
Sure.
But I'm okay with that too, because I just think I'm still old school. I like having something physical on my hand. You know, this is cool.
I think I think that is where vinyl is making such a comeback. There was an article that I read, I want to say this was about 2 weeks ago or so, that for the first time since, I believe, 1984, 1985,
yes,
vinyl outsold CDs.
Yep.
Because, yes, just like you said, I'm the same way. I want to put my hands on something when I want to have that listening experience. If I'm working on the computer, I've just got my Spotify going, music's in the background, right? If I'm mowing the grass, I've got my phone in my pocket, I got my AirPods in, and I'm just listening to it because of the absolute convenience factor. But for those artists that, you know, really mean something to me, where I want to physically, tangibly hold something, I want to hear that crack when that needle hits the vinyl, and I want to watch that spin around, and yeah, I do want to get up off the couch and cuss just a little bit because I have to get up and flip the record over, or I get one of those that's too vinyl, and it's like, okay, now I'm on side C because I got to get the second record out to, you know, keep listening to. But look, that should be part of the experience. And especially in this COVID world that we're living in now, you don't really have live music per se. I know you've got some of these drive-in shows, you've got some things like that. So the only real way to experience music and make it an experience rather just some background noise to me is vinyl. And the numbers are starting to speak for it. Mm-hmm. So I think the only way albums will survive is going back to the vinyl. I think CDs are going to become coasters. I don't think any of my kids even own any CDs. My oldest is 17 right now. I don't think she has a single CD. You know, yeah, she's got her Spotify account. She's got downloads that she's done off iTunes, and that's it. She doesn't really want CDs. She'd rather take that money and save it up for a concert ticket and go see them live. And it makes sense. Makes sense. I do remember one of my favorite bands when I went to see them live. I don't know. This was several years ago. I actually got to talk to the guitarist in the band, and I said, "Hey, I need to tell you something. I kind of feel bad about this, but I saw y'all play like 3 or 4 years ago, and I liked y'all so much, I went home and I went on Napster and I pirated all your music and I'd burn it onto a CD. And then I made some copies of that CD and I gave them to some friends." And he said, "Man, we really appreciate you doing that." He said, "Because if you wouldn't have done that, they maybe never would have heard of us, and maybe they were going to come buy a ticket to the show." Now, I don't want to say who they are in case I might get them in trouble for saying, yeah, "Hey, we appreciate you pirating our music." But yeah, it's nuts. But at least Spotify, yeah, your 0.003 cents or whatever, you can actually look at that in real time and say, "Hey, this song's been played 181,000 times. You could give me a CD and maybe that's my favorite song of all time, and I play it 10 times a day, every day for the next 10 years, but you're not going to know if I played it once and threw it in the trash or I play it on repeat." Mm-hmm. And at least Spotify tells you, "Hey, people are listening to this. They care. It's not just, I sold 50 CDs, so I just kind of forget about it after that." So,
yeah.
So, what do you think about the, and this is kind of going along the same lines of the internet, the streaming and everything, the social media portion now that it's played on music? Because used to it was the posters stapled to the telephone poles and the word of mouth and your buddies saying, "Hey, you know, my friend's in a band and doing this." Now you can go out with social media and you can say, you know, "Hey, follow me here. I'm on this Facebook and Instagram and all of this." And you can have people that you've never even met actually find your stuff, whether it be virtually or actually show up to a show without having to do the word of mouth. Mm-hmm. But you don't also have that intimate connection. So the social media for that part, good or bad?
Good for new followers. You do have to do some marketing though to get new followers, because just like anything else, I could put a song on Spotify and no one's going to know about it unless I advertise it a little bit. There's no way, because I'm nobody. I'm one of 1 billion artists that are out there that are putting stuff out there. It's not bad, but it's not great for your social networks. And I'll tell you why. As a matter of fact, I was just talking about this with someone the other day. I have, in the last 6 months, I've been obviously way more active online. I've got this show live at Chance's House. I've got music that's coming out. I've got some charity work that I'm doing where I'm trying to raise money for people. I'm a little bit too much out there. And I recognize that. As a matter of fact, I gotta scale it back a little bit. I might have even irritated a few of my friends and maybe even just a few of my followers because I was so excited about getting this stuff out and, oh, check this out. Oh, I got this. Oh, I got this. Oh, I got this. And one of my best friends reminded me, he's like, hey man, you have 5 different pages and you have, you've got an Instagram account, a Twitter account, you've got SoundCloud, you're on Spotify, you've got Reverb Nation, you're on Last FM, and you just told me that you're on Pandora now. Good God Almighty, when you post something, I get like 15 freaking notifications. He's like, I love you, man, but you got to stop. And I'm like, I honestly didn't think about it. And so I'm trying to dial it back a little bit. I have a dedicated page now, and you know, just for the music stuff. And if it's something important, then I'm going to post it up and I'm going to say, hey. But man, people are tapped out a little bit and I gotta dial it back. You know, I can't just be that guy all the time because people are going to be like, I'm done, you know, and I don't want to make anyone mad or make them think I'm spamming them because that's not what it is. I'm just excited. I'm excited about what I'm doing and I'm excited to share what I'm doing with other people. But even with the fundraising that I'm doing right now, I have to remember, and as a matter of fact, I just put out a post. It's kind of funny you say social media and I'm wearing people out. My cause isn't your cause. It may not be. Maybe it is. Maybe what I'm supporting right now, you think, hey, that's cool. I'll donate $5. I'll donate $50. I'll donate $500, whatever. But just because it's my cause now doesn't mean it's your cause now. You might have something else, you know? And if maybe I had just happened to tap into that thing, then you would be more likely to donate. So I've been frustrated over like the last couple of weeks because, man, I want to do good for this organization. I want to present well. Like, this is the first time I've legitimately had someone kind of go with me and say, hey, really, you're going to help us raise money? That's great. Here's some stuff and go out and fundraise. And it felt like I was kind of legitimizing what I was doing when before it was real grassroots. It was real just, hey, there's a button on Spotify, go hit it. And it almost feels like I've pushed too hard. And for anyone who's watching this, by the way, I'll be the first one to apologize and say, look, that's never been my intent. My intent is, you know, I've always said, be kind and listen to people. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that I'm just trying to do a little good in this world where I feel like that I can make a difference. And it's not about me. It is absolutely not at all about me. And I can completely and 100% see that people might think it's about me. And it's not. So I got to dial it back. So to answer your question about social media, I think that developing a fan base starts obviously with people you know. You have to. There's no way you can. Yep. Okay.
It's friends and family. That's where everybody's got to start.
But here's what you don't want it to be. You don't want it to be like freaking Amway where you're like, hey man, what are you doing tonight? You want to come over? Cause I got the wife and I got dinner. And then you walk in and we're trying to sell you freaking toilet paper, which although right now that might not be such a bad plan.
Yeah.
But
no, that's true. And that Amway thing was kind of the segue I was going to go with because things like media, entertainment, right? There's ways to support that without somebody having to, and I'm going to use an old man term here, open up their checkbook, right? Because there's so much of that on social media where it's like, hey, like my page because I'm starting this business and I'm going to sell you this widget because I went over to this party with some of my girlfriends and now I'm in this pyramid scheme. And so I'm going to bombard everybody on Facebook because these essential oils or whatever are going to make me rich. And now I'm a small business owner. And so when you see the creative stuff, there's always that knee jerk reaction in somebody's head, like, okay, Max or Chance is trying to get me to click on something to where I'm going to eventually have to pay for something because they're trying to sell me something rather than just saying, hey, look, here's something creative I'm doing. Listen to it. Let me know what you think. you know, that's all it takes. I'm asking for a little bit of your time. That's it. Yeah. I'm not asking you to buy anything. I'm not asking you to sign up in some pyramid scheme, nothing like that. Or, and I'd love to, you know, bring you over for dinner and then show you all these Amway products, you know, but there's so much of that that goes on social media. And, you know, it doesn't take anybody any time anymore now to, you know, take their Facebook profile and turn around and create a Facebook page and say, you know, here's my business and I work for this. And, you know, next thing you know, it's, oh, somebody's peddling something again. But what I will tell you is the, like the Instagram posts or the Facebook posts or whatever, where like you, for instance, which, I mean, one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to reconnect with you with the podcast deal and your live at Chance's House deal was, I wish there was so much more of that. If I see somebody with a picture of them playing an acoustic guitar saying, hey, you know, I just wrote this song, take a listen. I'm going to stop and take a listen. It might be 5 seconds. It might be the whole song. You know, if you do some live video and you're sitting there and you're playing for 30 or 40 minutes, you know, I'm going to listen to that. I'm not going to click on your page if you're, you know, trying to sell me essential oils or some goofy thing like that, because those same people, it'll be that. And then 2 months later, they're selling toothpaste. And 2 months later after that, they're selling some other goofy thing. But show me the creative stuff. I miss the days of social media where it was pictures of the kids and I went to this concert and it, you know, here's my music. I'm trying to make it. Maybe two people, my mom and my dad, are the only ones that are ever going to listen to it, but at least they're throwing something out in the world, because I'm sure even the Beatles at one point, and I know they're, you know, one of the groups you like, for Pink Floyd, you know, you got your poster there in the back, Pink Floyd, let's take them. At some point, they were sitting there and the only people that were listening to their music was their dad, that was probably screaming at them saying, turn that down, you know, what is all that noise that you're making? And everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah. So. No, absolutely. Well, you know, actually, let me ask you something, because, you know, you've been talking about this podcast and we're just kind of dancing around it a little bit. I mean, but what, you know, you're asking me all these questions and it's kind of like you're trying to figure it out, but why the hell are you getting into it? Why, what's the wolf and the shepherd, and where did that kind of get started? I mean, why?
Yeah, well, a buddy of mine and I would sit around and talk, and I'd go over to his house. He'd come over to my house. And we didn't just talk about, you know, what the greatest play of the Cowboys game was the other day and stuff like that. We always got in these deep discussions, and we like to argue with each other, debate a lot of stuff. We're, you know, right there together on a lot of stuff. We're really far apart. He's from England. I'm from Texas. So much different, you know, outlook. But of course, you know, he now lives here in Texas. And so then I started listening to podcasts, and I didn't know he was also listening to podcasts. We never spoke about the podcasts we were listening to or the topics that were brought up or anything. And one night we're sitting there and we're talking about some topic, and it's hard telling what it was. And we went on for over an hour about this. And I stopped and I said, hey, do you know what a podcast is? He said, well, of course I do. You know, I listen to this one, this one. I'm like, yeah, I listen to this one, this one. But do you realize if we would have just been sitting here recording this, that would have been an episode on a podcast? And he kind of sat back in his chair and he said, yeah, but that sounds like a lot of work. And we're both, by the way, very lazy people. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. That sounds like a lot of work. Well, that was about a year ago, like I say, and here recently I said, you know, we've gotten in several more of those discussions. I said, look, all we're doing is doing the same stuff you and I already do. We talk about things and we bounce ideas back and forth and all that. Why not just record it? There might be somebody out here that enjoys listening to it. And he said, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Nobody's going to want to listen to us. Well, a little bit later, we end up in this kind of same deal, but we had another one of our buddies over, and he was sitting there as him and I, my co-host and I were talking back and forth, and our buddy stops us and he says, you know, I'm glad I'm here listening to what y'all are saying, but I'm going to have to look some of this stuff up and y'all explain it very well. I just can't really interject anything, but it's really informative and entertaining what y'all are saying. And I looked at him, I said, see right there, there's somebody right there that basically listened to our live podcast that we didn't record because we're too lazy to sit down and actually do it. He's right. Like, okay, fine. You know, figure it out and let me know what I got to do. And so, you know, here we are and, you know, putting stuff out there, having fun with it. And, we've, you know, as of today, we've been on the air a week, you know, this that will come out on my side of the podcast realm will be our sixth episode. So, you know, we're still in the infancy of it, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And surprising enough, he's thoroughly enjoying it. In fact, before we hopped on here, I shot him a text message saying, hey, I'm recording this tonight. Really wish you were in town. And he said, yeah, you know, I wish I was in town too. And once he found out we were doing the Zoom thing, he said, well, if I'd have known you were doing the Zoom thing, I'd have brought my laptop or something like that. And I'm like, dude, it's too late. I've already got all this stuff lined up. So, and we said a long time ago, there's going to be some episodes that's just going to be me. There's going to be some episodes that's just going to be him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see how two people trying to interview one person could be a little intimidating. Even if we're all sitting around and we're friends, it's still like, okay, I've got to explain to these two guys and I'm just one dude, right? And now there's two people trying to ask me questions and bounce stuff back and forth. So I think our interview stuff's probably going to be a lot of one-on-ones like this. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't play the guitar anymore that much. I show my kids some stuff. I wrote some books about, I don't know, 10 or so years ago, did that, you know, kind of one of those been there, done that. I'm like, you know, I always have had that creative thing. I like to create stuff, but I can't draw. And, you know, I can't color anything or something like that. And I thought, man, let me give this podcasting thing a try. And like I said, so far, just it's been really enjoyable. And even in the short time we've been doing it, have, you know, virtually met some cool people along the way and seen some newer podcasters getting started. It seems like every day there's new podcasts popping up. But quite honestly, I think it's great. I think anybody that wants to start a podcast ought to start a podcast because you're not going to know unless you try it. And, you know, so what if it doesn't work out for you? I mean, we still don't know if this is going to work out for us or not. We hope it does. We're having a blast with it. But our deal was, even if we're only talking to three people, so what? We're having fun with it. And we're going to stay true to what we've been doing with it and our format and all that good stuff. And, you know, we're not going to sell out, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
So. Yeah. I have, speaking of what that is, I mean, I've kind of watched over the last, you know, let's say 30 to 45 days, I've been watching each week as I've been doing, you know, the live broadcast that I'm doing, I'm watching it do something and it's weird. I understand it now. It's what I was explaining before. I might just be wearing people out. So I got to get back to basics a little bit, you know, I'm going to just keep it simple and, continue to play music because that's what it is. It's called Live at Chance's House for a reason. But I always end up playing for at least an hour or sometimes hour and a half. Yeah. I played last Thursday for an hour and a half without stopping because I'm taking requests. I'm like, this is too much fun. I don't have anywhere to be. I was on vacation. I'm just doing that.
Right.
But I have a core group of really just some of the nicest people and greatest friends that come in, week out. And regardless of whether I've got 100 views or 500 views. And I've had it all in between. It really doesn't matter because, you know, in the last 6 months, I have made some of the most important connections with people that I may have ever made in my entire life. And this core group of friends are people that I've known for years. I mean, just as long as I've known you, and in the last 6 months, I feel like that they are the family that I, you know, never knew I had. I feel like, you know, one of my friends who I've just been, we've been friends forever, and we've always been more than acquaintances. We've always been friends, but I mean, he's like my brother. I mean, anything he'd ever ask me to do, I'd do, and we just have fun. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, I come up with the stupidest ideas. I've got some really lame ideas, I'm not going to lie. And I've got this new thing now where I'm having people throw out songs, and if I know how to play them, I just play them. Even if I don't know how to play them, I'm playing them. And I'm really not that great a guitarist. I'm pretty good. All right. I'm pretty good, but I cheat, and I got to look it up, and I'll look it up and go, oh, really? That song's only four chords? Oh, hell, I can play this. Check this out. And sometimes I surprise myself, but about 60% of the time I completely trash the song and I have no idea what I'm doing. And it's really freaking funny. So that's the bit.
Yeah. But you know what? Yeah. But you're having fun doing it. And that's the great part. You can take something like that and have fun with it and butcher a song and say, you know, that sounded terrible, but I hope y'all enjoyed laughing at me.
I got the chorus, right?
I didn't mess the words up too bad.
Right.
But yeah, and then at least, you know, because of your love for music and what you do with music, you've got your actual recording stuff that you're doing, and you know, that's kind of your serious stuff. Like, you know, I got a funny side. I like to laugh. And I like to, you know, laugh at myself. But, you know, I do have that serious side. So let's talk about this new song that you just released last week, correct?
Yeah.
So walk us through this new song.
The song is called Back from the Mist. It's a song that actually got written many, many years ago. It's a much older song. I wrote it with, he was in my wedding. He's one of my closest friends. He's like my brother. His name's Gil Valencia. And the first guy I ever wrote songs with when I was, 19 years old, he showed me how to play a few chords. We wrote songs together. And he was part of that group of that classic 100 songs I wrote, and 96 of them were bad.
Gotcha.
Well, he moved here around 97, 98, like I did. He was traveling. And his business brought him to Dallas-Fort Worth when he was from El Paso too. And so we had a couple of years together here in the late 90s. And we ended up writing some songs. What's funny about this song is that I called him and I said, hey, I'm re-recording Back from the Mist. And he was like, oh, that's cool. Great. You know, you wrote that song anyway. I'm like, no, I know I didn't, because I've got the sheet music with your handwriting on it. You wrote the music. I wrote the lyrics. And he's like, I didn't write that song. Anyway, it was funny because it was so long ago, he didn't even remember. And, but what I did with it was I had about 5 years ago, I had just tracked it again. And I said, you know, I can sing that song way better now. I've gotten a lot better since 99 on how to, you know, to produce music. And I just liked the song, and it's a very personal song. And it's not even something I need to tell you about, because it's one of those songs where it kind of, if you listen to it, it's going to speak to everyone in their own way. It's a song that was developed from a moment of hopelessness that leads to a moment of hope, you know, which is all you can ask for. And so I called him and I said, hey, I'm re-recording this song. I hope you don't care. And he's like, I don't care. Remember, I couldn't even remember. I wrote the song. and he seems to remember that I wrote everything. And then it was funny. So I said, I need all your information, man, because you're about to be a BMI artist. I said, I'm going to put this thing out. I'm really recording it. And I need your stuff, because you're going to be a composer on the record. So get ready. And so we've had fun going back and forth about that. But the song is it's a little bit of a throwback. It's kind of got a 90s feel. And it's something that's just in my wheelhouse, because I love 90s music anyway. But it's been more fun than anything else. And I really, really think that it's, you know, this and the last couple of songs I've done, I really think just some of the best work I've done. And I'm just proud of it. So, you know, it's doing okay. It's been out for a week. It's just, I think it just hit over a little over 3,000 plays. I remember when Every Step came out and it hit like 10,000. I told one of my friends, I was like, there's no way it's going to do much more than this. He's like, I bet you that it's going to hit 100. He's like, it's going to hit at least 100,000. I'm like, there is no freaking way it's going to hit 100,000. And he's like, you want to bet me? And I'm like, sure, whatever you want. And he's like, okay, if it hits 100,000, then for Halloween, you have to dress up like Ron Burgundy and say, I'm kind of a big deal.
And, I love it.
Yeah. So I got to pay up that bet. And now it's on its way to 200. And who knows what's going to happen with this new one. I mean, it's pretty exciting. I will tell you this, is that these first 3,000 plays, though, that has happened have been completely organic. I haven't started promoting it yet. So I know for a fact that people that followed me on Spotify or followed me on Apple Music, or one of the coolest things that's happened to me recently is my song's getting Shazammed. Well, you can't do that unless... Oh. It has to be playing publicly somewhere. Someone has to go, right. Wait a minute, who's that? Well, I get notifications. Apple owns Shazam now. So they send me a weekly update and they'll tell me how many times my song got Shazammed. I'm like, are you kidding me? So the organic growth is happening. It's just taking a long time because I don't have millions of dollars to put in advertising to tell the entire country, hey, check out my new single. So, right. But you know what? It doesn't matter. It never was about that. It still isn't. I'm just very blessed and thankful for the people that are in my life and the friends that I have. And look, my social network in general, I mean, everyone that's on my social network, for the most part, I can tell you, I know my only rule is that I've met you at least once and I can tell you a story of where we met. That's it. If I don't know anything about you, that's okay. But everyone's been really nice. Look, the fundraising's been going great. People are really supporting the songs and it just is cool. And I love doing it. And I'm going to keep doing cool. it. You know?
Good deal. Well, let's have a listen to the new song.
Okay. That sounds great.
It's a full moon rising over a grassy hill. Late one afternoon, the sun is so still. And the seagulls fly back from the mist. I'll let you. Sunshine through, oh, and the seagulls fly back from the mist. I'll let you go on. Mistakes are hard to live with, so I'll let you go. Come fly back to me, bring my shine back. It's been so lonely, peeking through the clouds. Is that you saving
Man, that sounded great. I think, honestly, you might have a race on the other song. So
I know
this one just came out. Like you said, you just released it last week, right? So it's got some catching up to do because the other song had a head start. So in all fairness, maybe you need to look at those metrics as they go on. But, you know, both great songs. Looking forward to what's coming next. And I always enjoy your music, Chance. And I appreciate you sharing that with everybody, both for, you know, your listeners and my listeners as well. Just absolutely great stuff. Great stuff, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a lot of fun doing it, and it's just one of those things that I'm going to keep doing. And the next one's already on its way. It's been done and it's in the can, so to speak. And we're going to set a release date. Maybe I can do that thing where we talked about earlier. I'm going to catch everyone's attention like about 4 weeks from now and go, here you go. Another single.
There you go. Yep. Yep. And hey, nothing wrong with that. So you got another one in the can, and you said, you know, maybe, you know, try to release something quarterly, right? So,
yep.
So in this COVID area that we're in right now, if you were going to collaborate with somebody on a song and you couldn't do it sitting, you know, face to face or in a studio, how would you do that? What process would you go through? What arrangements would you make right now to get that creative juice flowing that you don't have by sitting in that room and seeing somebody play and being there live with that? How have you made that transition?
This new song that's coming out in October, I did exactly what I'm about to tell you. And we did that. The person that I'm collaborating with, it's a song I wrote. Okay. I wrote the song. However, I wanted to do something. And his name is Xavier Valdez. I've had him on my show, and the way we met is I put out an ad on Instagram for my first single, Every Step, and he clicked on it and went, I never click on, he even told me straight up, he'll admit it, I never click on Instagram ads. He's like, I clicked on it though, you hooked me because I like the song. So he sent me a message and said, hey man, I just checked out your tune. I think it was really good. That was it. I said, thanks. That's awesome. I really appreciate it. And the next thing you know, just kind of organically, we started chatting on Instagram. And he's like, hey man, I got this single. You should check it out. I checked it out. I listened to it. And just like in the old days where word of mouth gets around, you burned a CD from Napster and you gave it to some people because you wanted your friends to check it out. You thought, dude, this band is killer. You need to check this out. I did the same thing. I listened to this guy's music. I'm like, damn, this is cool. This is music that I like too. And it's different though. It's indie rock. It's very, I've told him that the best description I can give for Xavier's music is like Gorillaz.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's got rock. It's got hip hop. It's got indie. It's got swirling, dreamy atmosphere. It's got chill. It's got ambience. It's got trance. It's a little bit of everything. And I've always, always, always wanted to write a song that sounds something sort of like that. And so I said, hey man, I got this new song that I just wrote. You want a partner? And he was like, yeah, dude, that'd be killer. He's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I'll tell you what, let me send you a song. So I recorded the vocal and I recorded the guitar part in Logic. I shot him over a mix and said, here you go. It's at 96 BPMs. It's the key of C. Take a listen and let me know what you think.
Yeah.
We did one Zoom call and talked about a couple of things. He's like, well, this is what I'm thinking. I kind of got this idea. And what do you think? And I'm like, I think that's a great idea. Maybe not this. Let's try this. He's like, ah, that's a great idea. We zoomed for an hour. And 3 days later, he sent me a demo track of the entire song that he had redone. He took out my acoustic guitar altogether. He had made a beat. He put a bass line down, he throwed in some guitars, and he said, I'm just going to delete your vocal. The track's done. I'm sending it back to you. I need you to give me a solid track for vocal, and we're going to send it to mix and master. And I'm like, done. And we had the song completed in, I don't know, 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. And so then now we also talk. I mean, like, as a matter of fact, I just got the final mix today. We had to tweak here and throw some extra bass in here and pull my vocal back, just what you normally do. And I said, dude, it's done. And I had texted him, and literally before we got on this call, he texted me. He's like, dope, bro. He's like, that's dope, bro. I can't wait, because he's way younger than me. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. So, but that's how we did it. And we're going to release the song. He's getting producing credits, and he's also, we worked out a deal in the back end. At the end of the deal, I'm the publisher. I wrote the song. No matter what, I still get credit for it, because that's just the way the music industry works. But
right.
There's no way that this song would be as cool as it is right now if he hadn't contributed, given the ideas, and put it out there. And we even took it a different step, which we even took it a different way and had it, you know, mixed again and produced and had someone else listen to it. I mean, we put some effort into this thing, and it's had its hand, you know, people have had their turn with it, and it's really come out to be a great production. So, you know, he's going to be listed with producing credits. Unfortunately, he's not a composer. It would be like if he did a cover of my song. It's basically a remix, but it's not, because he created something and I created something, and we put those worlds together and we got a killer song. So the title of the song is called Shining Through. And so when I feature it, it's going to be on my channel, but when we feature it, it's going to be Shining Through featuring Xavier Valdez, just as if Beyonce and Jay-Z put out a song. Jay-Z's definitely not put out a record featuring Beyonce. It's the other way around.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so what you're saying is you're the wife in the marriage then?
No, my God. First of all, that came out completely wrong. And the other thing is I'm not saying that. Listen, my buddy Xavier is talented as hell. And my point was, is that she was the talented one. I wasn't making comparison to me. I am no way, you know.
Okay. All right. We'll let that slide, Chance. Yeah, we'll let that slide.
I'm not so. Queen Bey. It's not happening.
Now, earlier, you know, to kind of shift gears, we were talking about that when we had our kind of like pre-phone call before this of catching up, and we kind of got into it a little bit earlier about the karaoke days. I mean, I remember when you were doing the DJ thing and you were doing the karaoke hosting thing. Lots of interesting nights that we had doing those shows. Two that came to mind for me was, I remember, of course, this is, you know, the internet's still there, but it's not, you know, in full fledged. Like you say, it's still kind of the AOL days. I remember going in one night and telling you that Rage Against the Machine broke up, and you had not heard that news. So, I mean, in today's day and age with the internet and social media, if Rage Against the Machine would have announced today they broke up, you would have known about it within 45 seconds to a minute.
Yeah.
You had somehow went that whole day and didn't know that Rage Against the Machine broke up.
Yep.
You made a phone call or two and verified that it wasn't just Max making stuff up, because Max likes to make stuff up. And that whole night, in between all of the karaoke songs or all the karaoke singers, whatever, all you did was play Rage Against the Machine all night long. And I always thought that was great. But here's a crazy one for you. And this is a little bit spooky. So when we had our phone call earlier this morning and we were talking and we kind of, you know, lined up everything. Hey, here's the time and here's all this good stuff, right? I had Spotify going, and I have a big playlist that's, honestly, I think I've got it up to like 32 hours now. And I just, you know, I hit play and shuffle and it goes. And it could be Frank Sinatra, and then it's going to be, you know, Rage Against the Machine, and then mm-hmm. Smashing Pumpkins, and then theme from Star Wars. It is just the messiest playlist you've ever seen. So we got off the phone. And I hit play on there, you know, because obviously I didn't want to have music in the background when we were talking. Don't remember what song finished. But the very next song that came on was Bandidos. And I remember the day of September 11th. You were hosting a karaoke show. And we went out that night. Kevin Mills and I were there. And you had lost some friends in the attacks, or I can't remember if you lost some or you were in fear that you had, and you played that song over and over and over again because of the line in the song, "Everybody knows this world is full of stupid people." And I just thought that was so eerie when we had talked, and the very next song in my playlist with that was that song. And I had to bring that up to you because it started playing and I thought, you gotta be kidding me. You know, Spotify's not that smart. They weren't hanging out with us 19 years ago when that happened. How did Spotify just all of a sudden play that song? So I do remember, you know, you always hear about where were you at on September 11th. I mean, I remember that morning, obviously, you know, where I was, but then that evening of saying, you know, hey, you know, we gotta go do something to get our minds off of this. And I was surprised that you were even there. You know, a lot of places closed down, but there was something about just getting back to the normalcy of getting to do something that was normal that made you kind of forget about it. And I will never forget that night when you replaying that song over and over again. So, yeah, you know, like you said before, you and I go way back. I don't know if you even remember that or not, but you and I were together that day on September 11th. So
I do remember that actually. And what's interesting is you've brought something up that no one knows, because it's one of my favorite songs just because I think it's a funny song and I think it's great. It's so poignant and it's just a good track. But about, I don't know, 3 months ago, I made a video of me playing it acoustically. And I did like 6 panels of, you know, here's me and here's me singing my backup and here's me playing guitar and here's me playing shaker and here's me playing tambourine and doing some silly stuff because I like the song. But I've liked that song for a lot of reasons. And I actually do remember that. And that was a hard day for our entire nation. It was a hard day. And yeah, I was fearful for some people. My wife lived in New York for many years, and we kind of didn't have, you know, we didn't know what was going on. We couldn't place it, and phone lines were out, and we were trying to get a hold of people, and it was important, and we had no idea what was going on. And so, yeah, I do remember that, and that's a great memory. Thank you for sharing that too, because sometimes we forget those moments, and it takes just a minute to reflect back and go, yep, that was a big deal, and here's why, and it meant something to me. And you know, that's one more reason why, while we may not have been in you know, contact for many years, you know, you and me and all of our, we still have a kind of a core group of people that used to go to those things that, you know, I'm still friends with a lot of them, actually all of them I'm still friends with. And we've had connections. We've had important connections. We've had big ones. We've had happy times. We've had sad times. We've shared, you know, funny moments. We've shared drunk moments. We've shared a lot of stuff. And, yeah. You know, it's kind of amazing though, but you know, how just our worlds intersect, but then they slowly drift away if you don't maintain and just kind of nurture those relationships. It's not on purpose. It's not, hey, I don't like this person anymore. It's our lives went a different way because we found something that was important to us. I got married. You got married. I got out of karaoke. You got into, you know, your business. I got into my business. You know, everything that has evolved. And, you know, this is another perfect example of why I love doing Live at Chance's House and why you probably love doing podcasting now. We have now just reconnected something where I'm glad that we did. I now have another person that's in my life that I remember and still have truly memorable moments with. And you just reminded me again why stuff like this is so very important.
I agree. And even in this, you know, COVID era that we're in right now, or people call it the new normal, which I truly hate that term because I hope this isn't really normal. I hope this is the temporary and we do truly get back to the normal. I don't want everything to be Zoom phone calls and, you know, you never see anybody and you can't get together and you know, it'd be like if you and I were in the same room, but because of everything going on, the first thing we probably want to do is shake hands. But then I haven't seen you in a while. It's like, okay, well, is Chance shaking hands? And you're thinking, well, is Max shaking hands? and the bizarreness that's going on with the social interactions because of all this is kind of putting a hurt on things. But in the same respect, the one thing I think that has shown a benefit is there might not have been a time where you and I could have met up and said, you know, hey, let's meet here for a drink, or, you know, let's try to get together and chat. But it's very easy for us to go ahead and plug the computer in and click a link and, you know, see each other face to face, even if it is through a camera, and catch up on old times. So I hope, honestly, with things like Zoom calls, podcasting, all that good stuff, that people are starting to make some more connections, maybe, you know, rekindling some of those old friendships or catching up with people and saying, you know, and I hadn't thought about you in a while. What's been going on? What's new? And all that. Because I think a lot of people have already watched everything on Netflix. They've already watched everything on Hulu. And now it's find some new content to entertain myself and catch up with some people from the past and make some new friends. I hope to meet some new people through, you know, your connections. I hope you meet some new people through mine. I hope there's people that are going to, you know, listen to your new song, reach out to you and say, hey, man, you know, it might not have been for this podcast. I might not have even heard of you or heard this song, but it's a great song and all that good stuff. I think that's where we could look at one thing this whole COVID mess might drag us out as a better society. Even with that word of mouth, now it's that digital word of mouth, but people are saying, hey, there's some talented people out there. There's some funny people out there. There's some interesting stories out there. And there's some old conversations that I need to get into and do a little reminiscing and move forward with things like that. So hopefully that's the silver lining on this, the horrible gray cloud we're in.
I couldn't agree more. And I appreciate the sentiment. And like I said, this is great. When you texted me a couple of weeks ago, I was like, hey man, I'm doing this thing. And, you know, I mean, it actually made me feel good. And it made me kind of proud because you're like, hey man, I see you're doing this thing. Hey, can you tell me kind of what you're doing and what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, man, it's great. And you're like, you want to do an interview? I'm like, yeah, man, that'd be awesome. Let's do it. You know, I wasn't expecting that. I was just, you know, hey, we connected. And again, it's that fringe of people that you know, and you kind of always have them there, but then you know, I don't want to use the word take advantage. You just, it's the idea that you always have people that in your life, we have to take the time every once in a while to stop and go, damn it, I got to call that person. I got to call that friend. I got to call my brother. You know, I got to call my parents. You know, I mean, we get into it even with the closest people in our lives. We get into that stuff where we just forget because we get so overwhelmed and consumed with what we're doing because we feel like that's all we have.
Yeah. And you know, one good thing that a lot of us probably have going on right now is, you know, a lot of the work from home and everything. So you've cut out the car time. So we do have a little bit more time at home now. And maybe we're at a point now where we're starting to think about those relationships because it's, well, I gotta get up at this time. And if I don't get out of the house by this time, I'm going to have all this traffic. And then you're stressing out about that. And you're getting into the office, you're doing all that stuff. Then you're fighting all that traffic home. And by the time you get home, you got a couple hours to talk to the wife, play with the kids, you know, do whatever you got to do around the house and go to sleep so you can wake up the next day and do it all again. And now that we got a little bit more free time, now we're actually finding the stuff that's important. And you know, relationships, talking about stuff, that's what's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you tell me real quick, where I know I can find The Wolf and the Shepherd on Spotify. Where else can I find you?
Yeah, so we're on all the major podcasts. Providers, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, of course, and all the other ancillary ones. We do have a website that is almost done right now. If you go to thewolfandtheshepherd.com, it's going to point you to all our podcast links. And of course, it always will. Got a placeholder page there, but if you go to thewolfandtheshepherd.com, you can find all of our back catalog podcasts. My co-host, who couldn't be with us tonight, he's going to be doing some blog posts on there and stuff. He's a much better writer than I am. And if, you know, for those that listen to this podcast all the time, like I said, he's away this week on what I call vacation, but what he would call holiday. So he decided to go on holiday this week. And but once he gets back, he's going to be adding some blog posts, and we're going to have links to guys like you, that have come on the show. And that way, if somebody's listening to this show, they can jump on the website and go find all your music. So, but yeah, thewolfandtheshepherd.com. We got a Facebook page too. Like I said, we launched a week ago, and the amount of listeners and the amount of followers has really blown us away. We were expecting maybe 5. We were going to be happy if the two of us and maybe 3 other people listened to it, and it's taken off, and we're happy about it. We're proud about it. We really enjoy what we're doing, and we're happy that other people seem to be happy with it as well. So
that's awesome. Well, I think what we're going to do, kind of at this point, is call the night. I really appreciate you connecting and saying, hey, let's do this thing. This has been a lot of fun. And I love the fact that this was, there was a couple of questions, but I really feel like this is just a conversation of two friends that have been able to catch up after a long time. And I'm glad that we got to do it. I'm glad we got to do it.
I most certainly am too. And I do feel that way as well. I mean, we did talk about some stuff, but it was some catching up, and that's great. And I hope whenever the next song comes out, you'll hit me up, and maybe we can do something like this again in the near future.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's great. The more that we have an opportunity, not only just to catch up, but maybe network together a little bit and bring our worlds together, I think that's a great thing. You can find more information about what I'm doing at Chance Munsterman on Spotify, but just about every link that I own known to man is at Music by Chance. If you go to Instagram, you go to my Facebook page, you go to my Facebook group, you go to whatever. Listen, I'm not even going to go through it. At Music by Chance, you can pretty much find whatever you want. And that's kind of what I got going on. So, hey man, great catching up with you. And
you as well.
Thank you very much. And let's stay in touch. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Chance. Have a good one.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. I hope you enjoyed my catch up with Chance Musterman. Coming up very soon, we're going to have another interview. And once The Wolf gets back off holiday, we'll go back to our regular scheduled programming. So hope you enjoyed this podcast, and look forward to talking with y'all very soon.